Welcome to Radio Rehab. I'm your host, Dana. We are joined in studio again today by Pippa. This is part two of our episodes that we recorded with her. And in today's episode, we're going to hear how she got sober and how she coped with the loss of someone very close to her. Let's join the conversation.
Welcome to Radio Rehab. Here's your host, Dana Keys.
So, you know, long story short, alcoholism was definitely spreading into my life and definitely causing a lot of damage. So I didn't want to look at it for a long time. And I went through spurts of like trying to maybe tone it down a little bit. But, you know, and that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think we all kind of try that. And
yeah.
Then
and it's
realize,
just distressing and
it
sucks.
It is really distressing. Yeah.
Like, it's just a painful way to be,
mm-hmm.
to constantly be trying to like not drink the way you want to drink.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, the longer you drink, the more your tolerance goes up. And then it's like, it's you're chasing something that's never, it's never going to be there.
Yeah.
I think I was always chasing the like the fun drinking in the very beginning before the complications and problems and like guilt and shame around it. And then, you know, I think as we get older and as things get more serious, like people, there's people left and right dying of this. And,
yeah.
and you have to see a lot of that. And how do you get that out of your mind? You know, it's, oh, the guilt is just like, it's awful. It's awful, you know, to stay drinking when you know it's so dangerous and it's real and it's, you know, it's a killer.
Yeah.
So it's no fun then.
Like, you know, your family is going to have to bury you and you're
yeah.
just like, I'm doing it anyway.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But you're so toxic from the alcohol that you can't really look at that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can't really look at that clearly.
I yeah. guess. Yeah. And during this time, you know, my birth mother and I, we were so close and I would visit regularly. We wrote letters regularly. I have a box of like 10 years worth of, you know, just really sweet letters. And the relationship could not have been better. And I felt so lucky to have known her. And then I remember I was going to visit 1 year and her sister called me the day before I flew out. And she said, Pip, we have to tell you, she's really not well. She's actually in the hospital. There's some complications with her liver and nobody wanted to tell you because we thought she'd be out and we didn't want to worry you, but it's bad. And, I was so shocked. You know, I had no idea. And here I was like heading out the next day. So they really warned me that she looked different and things were really, they were really apologetic for not telling me sooner, but didn't want to worry me. And it was this fine line of like, what do we do? And so I arrived in Dublin the next day and we went straight to the hospital and she was there in a wheelchair and it was shocking. She really looked different and the jaundice had kicked in and
oh.
it was full blown alcoholism, really, that was killing her. And her doctor said, one more drink will literally kill you. And I remember looking at her, and I always make reference to this just because it stands out to me, but her eyeballs were like that neon green, like tennis ball. Like, you know, it just, her liver was really shutting down.
Yeah.
And I had that visit with her. We talked a lot. And she said, Pip, I've really overdone it this time. I really need to give it up. And I just thought, yeah, I didn't know what else to say. And we ended up kind of skirting around the topic a lot of that visit. And it was just, it was sad and it was intense. And, but the good news was that trip really, the trip into the hospital really frightened her. And she did, she stopped drinking for 5 years after that, which was a miracle.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And she lived in this tiny village in the west of Ireland. I think there was one meeting a week and she didn't go. She felt like it was all men and she felt really intimidated and she kind of felt like they preyed on her a little bit.
Uh-huh.
She just felt uncomfortable and so she didn't go. And so for 5 years, she just gave it up, which was, again, like a total miracle that you can just do that after,
yeah.
You know, after drinking for that long. And so in those 5 years, I got, you know, postcards from her from all over the world and she traveled and she took care of all the kids in the family. And it was like she was already such a lovely person and she just stepped it up to like there was so much more life to her. And but then after 5 years, you know, there were a few health things that came up with her. And I remember it was one winter that was just like blistering cold in Ireland. Everything was shut down. You really couldn't, it wasn't safe to leave your house, get on the roads. And she was cooped up at the house, and she was a big, you'd love this, she's a big cat lady.
I love her.
And yeah, I mean, cats were her.
Didn't you tell me she had like over 20 cats or something? I'm like, are you sure she's not my real mom?
Oh my God.
I think she's my real mom.
One of the questions when I first sat down with Sheila Gallagher, the social worker, Sheila said, now, Pip, I must ask you, do you like cats? And I said, I'm sorry? And she said, just, do you like them? And I said, I do. Can I ask why you're asking? She said, well, your birth mother very much enjoys cats. She currently has 26. And I said, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, she is
the village cat lady.
She's totally my real mom.
Yeah, she is probably. We're linked for sure.
Yeah, I love her.
So it was this awful winter and a couple of her like favorite cats had died. She was going through some health stuff, pneumonia and stuff. And she picked up again. After 5 years, she didn't tell a soul. She just picked up. And then it really frightened her, and she confessed to her sisters. So there was a period where she was really struggling with it again. And she was brought into the hospital to hopefully kind of dry out and clean out her system again. But when she was brought in, she was brought into ICU, and her body was just shutting down. It was... You know, her doctor was really accurate in saying literally another drink could kill
even
you.
Even if you wait 5 years.
Even if you wait 5 years.
That is amazing. That's crazy.
Yeah. So.
So many of us think, you know, oh, it's been 5 minutes or however long it's been.
Minutes,
you know,
yeah.
Or like, oh, I have 30 days. You know, I mean, like so many of us think like that. I've always thought like that. Like, okay, it's been 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, in my case, several times it's been like, oh, it's been 4 months. But yeah, I mean, my disease is definitely ready and waiting for me. I just didn't realize that your liver is constantly waiting mm-hmm. for you to like take that next drink to just go, I told you no, and leave your body.
I know.
Wow.
So even when she was admitted to the hospital, she brought in her little, you know, her writing pad and her envelopes. And presumably she, you know, she'd sit down and write a few letters and just dry out and go back home. And that was not the case. She died in there pretty quickly. And she was 49. You know,
wow.
It was. So I got the call. I was at home one day. And you just never forget that. And I knew. I was at the point, too, where I knew. Like, something had to change with me. I knew I was drinking way too much. I knew it was really dangerous. And I really wanted to stop. And I actually talked to her about it before she died. I said, I have to tell you. I'm scared of my own drinking. I said, I really need to do something about it. I would like to be done. And I told her I'd started going to meetings. And I'm so glad that we were able to talk about that. You know, even though it was the very beginning of my journey and I didn't know if I was committed or not. But I'm so glad I was able to just share that with her and say, hey, I'm really struggling too.
Yeah.
And so after she died, I mean, I drank heavy then for like 2 months. And it was just that sad, like, poor me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I couldn't travel back for her funeral. My passport had just expired, and I couldn't prove that I was a blood relative, so I couldn't get even like an emergency passport. And I missed her funeral, and I just was devastated. And I thought, you know, I'm her only child, and having not known her for 20 years, and then I got to have her for 10 really incredible years. And how is it that I can't be there at her funeral?
Yeah.
And in hindsight, thank God I wasn't there because I was still drinking. I was still really upset. I was like, I didn't have, you know, I wasn't coping in the way that I could cope today. And what a blessing. And so I dove into meetings and I really committed. And when I was 4 months sober, I got to go back. And thank God, you know what a different trip that was. And I got to sit up with my granny who never drank in her life. She and her husband, they never drank because of alcoholism that was way, you know, in their family.
They don't want to risk it.
They'd seen all of it before in their family. And so when they got together, when they got married, they loved that the, you know, they were both, you know, totally sober and just little pioneers who just never drank, you know, and it was huge for them. So then to have their firstborn die of alcoholism at 49 was just crushing.
Yeah.
And so then I got to sit with my granny when I was 4 months sober, and we stayed up one night till midnight talking. And I got to explain sobriety and what the community of AA really offers. And I think that I was able to offer her so much peace around the whole death, because I could show her that without any community, without any support, nobody stands a chance, really. You know, the fact that she was sober for 5 years was a miracle.
Amazing.
Who can do it alone?
Oh, my God.
So I was able to, like, I was able to really spell it out with my granny that I think that helped maybe relieve maybe any guilt that, you know, because I'm sure everybody in the family wondered, what else could we have done? And so I was able to just indirectly explain how the community, we hold each other up. And without that, there's just such a small chance for anybody to survive. And so that visit was huge for me, just to sit up to midnight and have that talk with her. Like, I'll never forget that. And what a gift that was at 4 months.
Yeah.
And then, God, how the gifts, like, just kept coming and coming. But that was the first real moment of, like, you know, I think it was the first time of really thinking of alcoholism as, like, such a blessing than such a curse.
Yeah.
It was finally starting to shift where I thought, God, this is, I was able to give her that little bit of peace, I think, I hope.
Yeah, and you get to use your experience to help other people.
Exactly.
So, okay, so now you're 4 months sober and that happens. And
now
you're
4 months sober. And what was funny, too, is, you know, I think people that are not sober, they always ask me, like, how bad were you? Like, was it really, like, people that aren't alcoholic, they don't get it. And that's okay.
They don't at all.
But, you know, I just, it's hard to explain to somebody, but I wasn't where I wanted to be in life. I was tired of being hungover. I was tired of not accomplishing things that I really wanted to accomplish and things I was really capable of doing. And there was a lot of things. Like, I love to paint, you know, art for me as a kid. I was always drawing. Dad said, when I was little, he said I would do these tiny little drawings. They were like postage stamps. And I could be alone and draw for hours and hours. And that was something I really loved. But, you know, I'd start a painting and then have a few glasses of wine. And then I'd have to say, okay, this, I give up. I can't.
Right.
I'll just pick it up again later and not, you can't mix the two. I couldn't anyway. I'd get really distracted after a couple glasses of wine. It didn't work. So when I got sober, there was an art contest in Sonoma. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to enter. I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm sober and I might as well try for little things like that. And so I did this poster and the committee called me and they said, we'd love to offer you second place and we'll offer you a booth. And it was great. So basically then I think I had a month maybe to put together all this art and do my first show. And it was a lot of work. I mean, I didn't know, you know, any of it. And so I had to get all the cards and things printed and promote it. And so I just painted and painted and painted and painted. And it was a big deal for me because I used to go to that show for the Vintage Festival.
Oh, that one.
I used to go there every year. And I used to walk around. I would admire these artists. And I would think, how do they do that? Like, how do they pull off all of that? And so I got to do that year. And I felt really good about it. And then the next year came around. And I thought, you know, they were so good to me last year. I'll enter it again. And so I did. And then they called me that year and they said, we'd like to select you for the first place winner. Can you do? And so for me, that was really exciting.
That is. That's really cool.
Stick it out. And for years, I kept saying, maybe I'll do it next year. Maybe I'll do it next year. And so in sobriety, it was like just stuff like that. That was really important to me. And it was a big deal. And I got to go up there and, you know, and people would come up and buy my work and ask me to sign their posters. And that was fun. And that was, you know, it was just a small part of what I love to do, like coming back. So that part was really important. And I just dove into like the community, the people. I went to all the things that was recommended I go to, beach parties and conventions and things that, you know, I didn't really want to go to, but I knew it was good for me and I knew it was important to show up. And I met so many just incredible people. And heard so many great stories, and you just connect with people in a way that you never connect with outside of the rooms. You know,
right.
There's something magical in those rooms where we're all like so willing to be vulnerable and just sit down and like share our absolute truth, yeah. you know? And I love like Brené Brown's TED Talk about the power of vulnerability. And like only in those rooms, I think, is where it really comes to life for all of us.
Like we now I have to listen to that. I haven't heard her TED Talk.
Oh, God, it's so good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the power of vulnerability.
Yeah, it's like there's people like Brené Brown and Marianne Williamson. Mm-hmm. They're not in the program, but when they talk, yeah. it's like, oh, that's so programmed.
Yeah.
But Marianne Williamson is constantly quoting Alcoholics Anonymous. She's like, exactly. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they say this.
Yeah.
Because she has so much respect for just, you know, the words mm-hmm. and the values of the program. So, okay. Brené Brown's TED Talk. We'll all go listen to that.
The power of vulnerability. Okay. Yeah. But that's what we get in the rooms. And we sit down. And once you're willing to, like, separate alcohol from life, it's like any door is open to you. And, you know, giving it up, sure, it's so hard. And my heart goes out to...
Oh, it's the shittiest. Yeah.
To newcomers who... It's really hard. If that's what you've used your whole adult life to cope with any sort of emotion, it's huge. It's so hard to give up. But once you get past that, once you can give it up and then figure out how do you live the life that you really want to live, that you're really capable of living. And we do that with the support of one another. And people come in and share their most intimate details of their life. And you just think, thank God. They are willing to share that because that helps somebody else share something they really need to share.
Yeah.
And I look around, you know, anytime I'm speaking at a meeting, if it's in Sonoma, I'll look around that room and think, I know the most intimate details of these people's lives. And they're willing to share them with me. And that makes me feel like I can share my innermost details, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how we grow. And that's how we get to be where we want to be in life. And so my heart really does go out to people that are new and struggling. Can I do it? Can I not do it? And look at us. Like, we're living proof. You can absolutely do it.
That's what I always tell people, that quitting is really, really hard. But staying stopped when you're, say you're sober and you're going through a hard time. Going through that hard time and staying sober is so much easier than if you go back out there trying to come back in. Because my story with all the relapses, like, it gets harder to come back every single time. It's more mm-hmm. humiliating. You know, it's more like, sometimes I think the thought of coming back, because I know I can't successfully kill myself because I tried for so many years. The thought of coming back is so unappealing that I'm like, I'll just deal with this and stay sober.
Yeah.
Because there's no way.
Yeah.
It's so hard to come back. And I know, because people are like, oh, I don't know if I can get sober. It's like, oh, you can. But it's just hard to impart to them how they're going to feel at 60 days, how amazing it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just remember sitting in my car in Sonoma and crying because I realized that because I was like, God, I feel so good. I feel like it was like almost euphoric. And I realized I wasn't on anything. Wow. Like, I had nothing in my system but like, you know, cereal and water. And it was like, tears were rolling down my face because I was like, oh, I don't need anything to feel great.
Mm-hmm. And I always think now, too, like if ever I get sick or get a cold or something, I don't even like to take anything because I don't like to feel anything but now. You know,
like cold medicine.
Yeah. But I thank God, for how long were we taking alcohol just to feel differently or feel better or feel... Happier,
or just to feel normal. Feel
so, yeah.
That's the grossest part.
But now
part.
It's like, God, I love what I feel. And I love to feel like this. I don't want to ever change that. But even the other night, I mean, I'm 7 years sober now. And the drinking dreams are still vivid. Like the other night I dreamt.
You still get those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Shit. Because I do. I'm like, oh, they'll probably go away.
No, the other night I got one and in my dream I started drinking again and I didn't tell anybody. And then I got a notice in the mail saying I got a third DUI and I was, you know, I didn't remember.
Just from existing?
I didn't remember getting it. So, and I guess in the dream my parents also got the notice that I got the third and they were devastated. And I was so afraid to go back into the rooms and put my hand up as a newcomer. And so I told nobody. I wouldn't tell my sponsor. I wouldn't admit I was new. It was frightening. And I woke up so panicked and I thought, here I got a letter saying you got DUI number three. I don't even remember it. Like, that's crazy.
That is so funny.
And I woke up and there was that moment of like, oh, thank God. It was a dream. It was a horrific dream. But, you know, it's Jesus.
That happens to me. No, that all my drinking dreams are like that too, where I wake up going, oh no. And it's, yeah, it's everything's bad already. And I have to tell people and I have to come back in as a newcomer. I mean, there's been times I've woken up like just almost about to call my sponsor on the phone. Like, oh my God. But then I'm like, wait a second. I just got out of bed. I wasn't out drinking.
God.
Yeah, it's always like the most horrible feeling. Thanks to Pippa for being on the show. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure and tune in tomorrow as we talk about Pippa's book, Intertwined, which is available on Amazon. We also discuss the death of probably the most important person in her life. Please join us tomorrow if you'd like to contact us. It's Radio Rehab at GoToProductions.com. You can call or text 415-496-9511 on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It's at Radio Rehab Dana. See you tomorrow. Keep coming back.